Well, I hate to be the guy who said I told you so, but last week I did. I told you we're growing and adding some new voices to the mix here, and that's already happening. You may have noticed some new videos on our channel from Gothics.
Cancel culture, on the other hand, involves people, usually on the internet, acting as a collective to completely reject and stop supporting someone because they have said or did something that's offensive. And depending on who you are, this usually leads to prolonged harassment from the public, which ends up looking a lot more like bullying than accountability. But don't tell the mob I said that, because self-reflection is very difficult for some people.
Vanessa Gothics is a new contributor to Right Now, and she joined me in the studio to talk about standing up to cancel culture, the virtue of having command over your emotions instead of them commanding you. Gothics and I talk about what it means to be an apolitical person in a time where everything is politicized or else. I really enjoyed our talk, and I think you're going to as well. If you've ever been canceled by the internet mob, Gothics has been there. Canceled by your own so-called friends, yep, she has been there too. She's going to be dropping a new video on that and other topics on her mind every week. We need to have a new and better discourse around cancel culture, and we're going to start right here. I'm Stephen Kent, and this is Right Now. You've been in D.C. for a couple of days now. You're not impressed? I saw you talking trash about our good old town on Locals.
So I've been in D.C. for just one day, and the aroma, it's a very unique aroma. It's like a combination of cannabis and farts.
That is smugness.
Okay.
I think that's just the disproportionately high incomes of the area mixed with crippling poverty and a sense of superiority.
Got it. All right.
Also the trash.
Okay. And, yeah. And you're just used to this?
So I'm not too used to it. I don't come into the city that much, which I am very grateful for. I live a little bit outside. But I like D.C. a lot more than New York. I mean, New York to me is exactly what you're talking about,
yeah,
but mixed in with like actual toxic waste.
Yes.
Everywhere that you step, and trash piles super high. I feel like DC is a pretty darn clean big city.
Yes, I did notice that. It's very, like, it's immaculate over here. Well, not, I won't go that far, but it's pretty clean. So it's like, you know, they kind of just put a beauty filter over, but I can still smell it.
The gardening here was great. I was just walking in this morning, and I was like walking around. And I was like, "All right, we have like a really big homelessness and trash and litter problem in this city." But my goodness, they do wonderful on the beautification side of things. The flower beds are immaculate.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you came down from Rhode Island, your home. Really happy to have you here in studio with us here at Right Now. This is a really exciting moment. Tell folks who are not familiar with you for the first time a little bit about you, where you come from, what you do. And then I think most people watching this are just already big fans of Vanessa Gothics.
So I got started as a live streamer on Twitch, as just playing video games. And I also did some live sketch comedy with my audience. And I was doing that for, I started in 2018. And the stuff that I'm doing on YouTube is pretty much within like the last year I started. But this is definitely different from what I'm used to.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big transition. You started on Twitch, and Twitch, you know, known for video game live streaming, also has like a huge element of political talk and just sort of stirring the pot that goes on there. And I know you were demonetized. Right, at some point for, you know, offending the overlords about your opinions about the possibility of a black Ariel being in The Little Mermaid. And you know, people came after you, tried to take away your livelihood, and you took your business elsewhere. I've just always been so surprised at your general origin story, which people who watch this show are familiar with, because there's so much worse stuff that goes on Twitch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So much worse.
Oh, yeah. So with Twitch, I didn't get demonetized, but I basically got run off the platform by other creators.
Okay.
And Twitch is it's one-sided in terms of political ideology and beliefs. Most people on there are left-leaning, very woke at times. So the people that are more conservative or, you know, don't subscribe to that, don't really have a voice because, you know, that's not acceptable. So I got canceled by other creators because of when The Little Mermaid, I guess Disney announced that The Little Mermaid was going to be a live action movie, and they said, okay, Ariel's going to be black. And I said, well, that's weird. So when I went on Twitter and I saw a lot of live streamers, calling people racist over people having like a different opinion for the casting. And I said, that's not right. That's not, you don't. That there has to be a reason you call someone racist. Not liking the casting is not a good reason. So I said that, I vocalized my opinion on that, and that was translated into me being anti-black, and that's pretty much how it started. I was just vilified as just hating black women and being anti-black and hurtful towards the black community.
That does not seem very intuitive.
It was not intuitive at all. I got run off the platform and I took some, a long
break. Can I actually ask you about that? Yeah. I think so. Your detractors, because they're always watching what you do. Anybody who doesn't like, anybody who does stuff in front of camera creates, they always have people who actually like spend their time watching their stuff just to be mad about it. And so that they can like stir outrage and also make money off of going after other people. Like there's an entire industry in YouTubing and Twitch for watching people's stuff that you hate, replaying it and then commentating on it and then making money off of it. Mm-hmm. I think people who follow you and sort of like hate watch your stuff are probably saying to themselves, well, obviously she has not been canceled because here she sits.
Yeah.
She is still here. They want you to just be gone. How do you think about the idea of like cancel culture mixing with like there is a huge ability today to rebuild new things and continue to be present? Because I think that's the tension there. It's like, there are so many people that I can think of who were canceled in 2019 who still have, you know, lively careers and they're still here. Yeah. So what's the tension there?
I like to say you don't consent to the cancellation because the thing is when you ask people, what is it you're looking for when you participate in these mobs? Like, because when you say, well, Gothics is not canceled because she has a big following or she's still doing these stuff. So what are you looking for when you say someone's canceled? What is it? Do you just want them to lose their income? Do you want them to lose their, you know?
They want you to donate all of your stuff to charities and be dead. Like, they just want you to be gone.
Well, that's not going to happen.
That's what they really want. They won't say.
Exactly, yeah. And I have, it's interesting because when I started to make the transition over into YouTube, a lot of my previous networks and my audience who vilified me as being this anti-black person, they still watch my content. And I know this because they'll make videos and they'll commentate on it and stuff like this. So I think it's interesting because if the mob sees that someone that they're canceling doesn't get canceled and they end up getting more successful, it almost becomes like an obsession for them. Just like keep tabs on Gothics and see what she's doing and commentate a play by play of what she's doing going forward. And it's really weird.
Little do they know that helps drive people's success in many ways.
Yes.
And like this is the thing about cancel culture that is so scary. But it is also like the way to beat it is you have to find your people.
Yeah.
And I worry so much for the people who don't have followings who then people come after them. Like the New York Times has now gotten into a habit of just like covering incidents of like racial slurs by high schoolers, writing stories on them, and then making sure that kids don't go to college. I can't remember the name of the story, but it came out last year where they did exactly this. And they got somebody's college acceptance revoked by doing a story about, you know, sort of casual racist slurs thrown around in high schools. And those people don't have recourse, but like creative types and people who are social media savvy can find their people and they can get them to come to their defense, build castles in opposition to cancelers. And then just like the constant attention from the people who want to destroy you, it's got to be stressful and it makes it hard at times, but it is part of how the entire ecosystem is built, like off of opposition to that thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is very stressful, and it just kind of comes with the territory. And I do feel for those people that don't have that following to sort of bounce back. But I hope that with, you know, people like me and content creators can sort of, you know, start, get things in motion, because I think overall, most people are sick of cancel culture, but a lot of people I feel don't have the courage to push back against it because no one wants to get canceled.
It's everywhere. I was doing a media training. So one of the things I do for my regular day job is I'm doing media trainings and sort of like PR stuff and coaching. And I was speaking to this group of young, sort of like college age conservative women who are starting internships here in the DC area. So they are all just now exiting high school. And a lot of them had to give speeches in our public speaking class that I was working through them with on their high school experience and how they became conservatives. Every single one in this group of about 15, 16 young women talked about being canceled in their high schools or on their campuses, and told horrific stories of their campuses or their classmates or the administrators going after them for simply not spouting sort of wokeisms and the right language and words. And it was, I mean, these were like Asian girls, these were Black girls, these were white girls. Like, everybody is afraid of this. Mm-hmm. Everybody has that word on the tip of their tongue, being canceled. And that there is the evidence of the problem. There is a fear and a chilling sort of thing going on right now where people feel like they have to say certain things. Because what you're talking about, I think on like the Twitch side of things, is everybody says these right words. They say marginalized people, people of color, mm-hmm. listen to POC. Yeah. And if you say those things, it's like a cover. It's letting people know I am with you. Mm-hmm. But if you're not saying those things and you're just doing gaming, mm-hmm. and you're just talking about the latest, I don't play much anymore, but the latest Call of Duty, and you're only doing that, then it's like a signal that you're against it. Yeah. Because you're not talking about it. And that's like what it means to be conservative in some ways today, is like opting out of that dynamic. Mm-hmm. Do you see that?
With the conservatism? I'm not sure.
It's like the conservative ethos. I feel like people who are finding their way drifting towards being conservative, they just find themselves like in opposition to the other thing.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Yeah, because there really isn't, I don't even know what category you would classify people as, but there really isn't much. It's either you're with them or you're not. I don't know. It seems like a cult.
So what came before streaming for you? You did Twitch. You started that in like 2018. I was watching a couple of your videos just the past couple of weeks, and you dropped out of high school.
Yep.
And then like did what with that? Like sort of what is the origin story of you sort of getting a worldview, mm-hmm. that sort of leads you to here where you are today?
I dropped out of high school and I just wasn't feeling it. I wasn't, for several reasons, but I dropped out and I just wanted to start making money. I was like, I want to get into the workforce. and I started just doing some like temp jobs, mostly customer service.
Me too.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, I think it should be required for people to do a few months in customer service, because I think it humbles people and it kind of teaches them how to speak to one another. Because mm-hmm. I find lately nobody wants to talk anymore, and nobody knows how to do conflict resolution and stuff like that. So
and just also like put themselves in the shoes of other people to solve their problems.
Yeah.
And like what you said, like being humble. So I worked in hospitality after school when I finished school in political science. I was like, well, I'm going to go work in a legislature and be a legislative aide or something for that for a senator. And it just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I found myself on the outs and I was like, well, I need a job. Mm-hmm. So I started working for Hilton, and I did hotel management for 2 or 3 years. And I loved it. I really did love it. Call center is probably like another level of like really having to be in the zone,
yeah.
on customer service. But being able to like hear somebody is upset about a thing and then being empowered to be the person who solves it, I liked that a lot. That gave me a lot of drive on a day-to-day basis, but that's just me.
See, I can't agree with you on that. I hated my job, but it helped me build up, it helped callous my mind and helped me build my patience when I deal with people, because you need a lot of patience in customer service. But yeah, I did that, and when I was working at a call center, I tried to apply for a supervisor role, and they said no, and they said because I looked like I wasn't interested in the job, which is very odd. I applied for it. Of course I want it. And I said, you know what? This is crazy.
I just want to determine you're not interested in the job.
I looked like I wasn't.
Was it the goth thing? Was it a studded necklace or wrist bracelets? And they're like, I don't think you want this.
Yeah, I don't think you want it. So I was really bummed out, and I said, well, this isn't going anywhere. I don't want to be in a call center the rest of my life. I want to start trying to find something that I'm interested in. And I had a coworker at the time tell me about Twitch. She said, you know, you can make money playing video games. I said, all right.
Really?
So, all right, let's do this. So I tried it. It turns out it's a lot more complicated than just playing video games. So I went into it originally because of the money, but I ended up actually really enjoying what I did. And yeah, that's pretty much how I got started with content creation.
What is the additional ingredient to success on Twitch? It's not just playing video games and throwing up a live stream screen. What makes people successful on that kind of platform?
Be open to feedback, be open to change, be selfish with your time and your energy, which is a really difficult one that a lot of creators can't grasp. And you can see this when they go on social media and they're engaging in drama and bickering with one another. You can use that time to work on your craft. Also, I think just consistency.
Consistency. I can see where some of the stuff that you kind of took away from customer service and working in that sector sort of fits in there. Like, it's like the customer feedback thing and like listening to people who follow you or doing your stuff, not being offended and being emotional about those kinds of things and those comments, because I would say like the number one thing that we have wrong and broken in society right now is emotion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Emotion control and people being able to put their feelings where they belong and use them for constructive ends.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people just get upset when they hear something like, it's nobody knows how to do something right when they first try it, you know, to go live streaming for the first time and expect thousands of people to flood your channel and support you. That's unrealistic. You have to like build on that and work towards that. And I think that's a part of growth, and being open to hearing that feedback means that you're serious. So I welcome it.
I'm only asking you this because I am currently reading a book on the history of Stoicism. Mm-hmm. But are you familiar with the Stoics?
I only recently heard what that means, yeah. And that's because I get comments saying that I'm stoic.
Yeah. People say that you don't emote enough, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just plain face kind of when you're doing your monologues for your channel and just telling it like it is, but like not feeling.
Yeah.
And I've seen you kind of smack that down before. It's just like, no, I just have discipline.
Yeah. Yeah. I cry.
just not for you.
But not for you. Not you don't even
you.
See it.
No, it's like these people, their entire ethos is like, I'm going to turn on the camera and cry for an audience about a thing and people will clap for me because I feel.
Right.
I mean, like this is, I think, one of the sicknesses in society right now is emotion, anger, fear. These are not considered to be vices. They are considered to be virtues today. Mm-hmm. Whereas you would want people to have discipline and understand the difference between emotion and passion.
Yeah.
Like emotion, we all feel. And I think in the Stoic tradition, kind of what I've been reading on this is like the basis of Stoicism is, you know, comes from ancient Greece and ancient Rome. It's kind of thinkers are Zeno, Marcus Aurelius, and the likes. And these people wrote about controlling or focusing on the things that you can control. Only focusing and putting your energy and your time and your efforts into things in which you can actually have a tangible outcome. And the things that happen around you in the world that you just simply cannot control, they are not worth your emotional input because you can only do so much. And that idea that you should just be focusing on the essentials and that you should feel and you should engage with the world around you and feel emotion, but not let them become passions, meaning acting without any reasoning.
Right.
That is the thing that we are supposed to be avoiding. And people will call that like being Vulcan or something like that and just being like, you know, unempathetic. And that's just entirely incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's very incorrect. And I, you know, to be fair, my emotional discipline was not like this, especially when I was back on Twitch. I think it took just rounds of me being canceled to kind of build up this tolerance to be able to separate this sort of emotion. But no, I think it comes down to just like prioritizing, like what is it you're working towards? So a perfect example is cancel culture. You know, what is your goal? And do you think that canceling someone is helping you achieve that goal? If the answer is no, then maybe you shouldn't do it.
What do you mean by that? So like when people engage in this, what do they think that they are trying to get? Because I mentioned earlier when like they just want you, mm-hmm. they just want you to like engage in like voluntary reparations. They just want you to yeah. give away everything that you have. What do you think that they are coming for in those scenarios?
I don't think they're coming for anything. I think they're acting on emotion and they're trying to do something to satisfy that emotion. Mm-hmm. Because I've never gotten a clear answer. They'll say accountability of like, who are you? And that's what I like to emphasize because I think it's a very troubling that random strangers online think that they have authority. It's
yeah,
weird.
In kind of going back to the Stoic tradition, like in that way of thinking, there are emotions that are considered to be good. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to reject the idea of sort of like pleasure and self-satisfaction. Joy is a positive virtue. Pleasure is a negative virtue. You should be living from joy to joy to joy. But if you are basing your happiness around satisfaction, that is like what cancel culture is fueled off of. Because getting into a mob and like joining with other people to go after a witch,
yeah,
like that is a personal vanity project for people to make themselves feel better.
Right. Right. And then, you know, and it becomes very obvious too, at the end of a cancellation, if you were to compare, what the original issue was that warranted this cancellation versus how the cancelers handle it. Sometimes the cancelers, their behavior ends up being worse than the original thing that they were going after the other person
for. Yeah, they straight up just engage in bullying.
Yeah, it's bullying.
Call it accountability. I don't understand the cognitive dissonance of how they can they blur those two lines and don't see themselves in some sort of villain role.
Yeah, I think it's because of the wordplay. If you say accountability, it sounds okay. It's like, oh, it's not bullying because I'm doing a good thing. They're not thinking about the consequences of thousands of people also doing the same thing.
So you kind of considered yourself, I think, apolitical, right? Like you would like politics to not be the center of life and existence. It inevitably is. You've switched over from Twitch to YouTube and you're doing social commentary now. A lot of the stuff that you talk about is pretty conservative in its ethos. Like, I get the vibe throughout that you've kind of found conservative thought. Do you think that is true? And where have you started to sort of, I don't know, like look for conservative thought and opinion as somebody who just came from gaming? Because, you know, political science nerd over here, like, I've read the great works of political science and classical liberalism, but nobody cares. Nobody cares. They would much rather hear from somebody who just, like, you know, is a video gamer and also would like people to leave people alone and be nicer to one another.
It's really it. Like, that's really, really it. I don't like to get too involved in politics because it's draining.
That's very good for you.
And to be honest, it's boring, but I have to because you can't escape it and it's infecting everything. I can't even say that I've developed more of like conservative thoughts. I think I've always kind of had a baseline. I've just never really expressed it because I mean, society kind of conditions you to only speak about, you know, good opinions and good thoughts. And I've just been conditioned to be like that when I started streaming on Twitch, and I'm trying to unravel that behavior now, because I don't think it's right that if you have certain views or certain beliefs, you have to be quiet. That's not fair.
I saw you doing repping Thomas Sowell a couple of weeks ago. Philosopher and political scientist.
Recently discovered him.
How did you come across Sowell?
I actually watched the Uncle Tom documentary last year, and then I'm like, who is this guy?
No, he's got some great books. One of the ones that influenced me that I had read was The Quest for Cosmic Justice. So this is a book from a couple of decades that he wrote about the faulty pursuit of utopia, basically. I mean, just that you can't have a perfect world and that there is always going to be tension between sort of ideologues and activists in the pursuit of making the world a perfect place, which will always require smashing a couple of eggs across the way. And hopefully those eggs are not people, and they typically always are. But then that there's instead just trade-offs. Yeah. Real life is just trade-offs. You can't build the perfect world.
Yeah, and that's what I love about Tom, because I believe that too. There is no utopia. And I think especially when we think about things related to like racism, because that's a big topic. It's really frustrating to see people think that they can eradicate racism, just get rid of it. And the manners that they're doing, there's only trade-offs.
When you were younger, did you think you lived in a post-racial society?
When I was younger, not really.
I feel like it's one of the quirks of the 90s and the early 2000s. It was sort of like in the air at that time. Like that was sort of one of the things I felt like things were not great. Mm-hmm. Things were obviously imperfect, but there was this moment of, I don't know, just like kumbaya and calm, I feel like, in the culture. And you didn't start to see that fully manifest until Barack Obama's election. And then you just would have this joke, and I've mentioned it a couple times on this show, where like Stephen Colbert on the old Colbert Report on Comedy Central would do his Bill O'Reilly impression, and he would always have this shtick about how he doesn't see color, sort of making fun of the ethos of colorblindness. And I didn't really get the joke when I was younger. But now I do, because the left has finally caught up with the idea that colorblindness is a joke, that you can live in a colorblind society. When I think most of us, we want that to be our existence. We want people to judge us based on the content of our character, not on the color of our skin. That's just gone right out the window.
Yeah. I always talk about the 90s and how much relaxed it was. And I've never encountered any type of racism. I've never had people judge me on my skin color until last year when it's anti-racist. And that's the only time I've heard of racist stuff.
Now, gamer boys can be pretty bad. I'd be surprised if you never
that's like the initiation. If you're a gamer, you kind of go through that and you're used to it.
Is that okay?
It's not okay, but I don't take offense to it, because I'm like, I'm never going to see you again. I'm not going to see you at all. You're through the mic.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of love what you bring to the table, and it's one, the goth thing, because like I identify as a grown up goth who just wants to be my true self, but no one will let me.
You're
just doing your thing, and to me, like, it is the vibe of so much conservative energy today. Is counterculture. Mm-hmm. It is countercultural to be on the right today. And I came up in the punk scene in college and the couple of years after, and it was just naturally a leftist environment. The tradition of punk rock music is, of course, mostly anti-establishment. Like, it kind of comes from the anti-Reagan and anti-Nixon years. And like, that's sort of where its roots are. Even though the Ramones were notably half Republican, half Democrat, and it got them in trouble a couple of times.
I didn't know that.
So the Ramones were a nice split band. But like, there is nothing in the left today that seems countercultural to me. Like, they've got Barclays and JP Morgan on their side and the Pentagon, and they call themselves like revolutionaries and radicals. And it seems to me like the only people who are fighting back against mainstream culture are people who would call themselves like the online right.
I think a lot of people on the left who are thinking they're you know, resisting and fighting the system. I don't think they've realized that they kind of have been integrated in that system now. But I definitely noticed that a lot of people that are kind of like leaning on the right are more of a counterculture, which is, I mean, it's kind of cool.
They just march right along. They just march right along with whatever they're told. And again, like, because the language is always changing so much,
right?
You know, it's, I think it was Barclays who, and this is like an international bank. They are incredibly unethical and have a long track record of hurting working people. But no matter, they can like put out a video during Pride Month where Barclays like teaches, people on social how to be good allies. And their video basically says that it's okay if you don't understand the words that you're saying, or if it's okay if you don't understand the experiences of people in this or this, this, that, or the other part of the LGBTQ community, but we say these things to be good allies. I was like, you're telling people to say things that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That sums up this entire moment.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's healthy.
No, it can't be. Like, no. Thinking freely has to be forming your own thoughts and knowing why you have them.
Right. And then also the thing with allyship, it's very one-sided, because I challenge that a lot on my channel, where I'll collaborate with people from the LGBT who, you know, thought-wise, they have more of like a right-leaning sense. And these people, they don't, when you say allies, they're talking about allies for people on the left, not the people on the right. So I think I would love to just highlight more diversity of thought to challenge those ideas, because when they say allies, it's not allies for the whole group.
Why don't we kind of like change the culture? I mean, because I think you're doing a really good job at finding an area in which there's a lot of cultural tension. We're both exhausted by the culture war, but we also participate in the culture war, and participating in the culture war fuels it. It's why it keeps going. And it just is unclear to me, like, where is the off-ramp for any of this stuff? How do we actually create sort of a disarmament between the left and the right, where we go back to live and let live?
Yeah. You
know, leave me alone. This is the problem that I don't know how to solve. And I feel like people like you are part of the solution, but it's so easy to get sucked into the vortex of it all.
Yeah, I still struggle with this too, because I'm curious how this is all going to play out. But sometimes I wonder if, you know, just like when it comes down to having someone, you know, dictate how you're supposed to speak and use certain words and stuff like that, I'm kind of unlearning that, because for a while I noticed that my speech started to shift because I was manipulated into thinking like, if I don't say this, I'm not a good person.
Yeah.
If I don't say this, I'm going to get attacked.
It's amazing how I started for a while saying marginalized groups.
Me too.
I said it for a long time, and I still will occasionally, and I don't have any, you know, gripes about that, but like I've started like trying to curb my usage of it so that I'm not just saying it as if just all people in all groups are just marginalized by nature of their very existence. It's weird how it creeps into your vocabulary.
Yeah, and I think it's like a manipulation tactic. And I think, well, at least the thing that's been working for me is I'm just very upfront about how I feel. Like, for example, the word marginalized, I look at that as, you know, you're putting yourself down. When you say you're marginalized, I'm like, why would you say that about yourself? And I try to simplify things with people that would normally get upset. So if I say like, you know, why would you call yourself marginalized? And someone says, why would you say that? You know, you're being insensitive. I'll try to simplify it, and I'll try to be calm, so they'll know that I'm not a threat. Because I think a lot of the times when the woke sees that someone doesn't subscribe to their ideology or their language, they take it as offense. And it's like, no, we just have to accept that not everyone is going to subscribe to how you think. We can still all coexist. And I think it's gonna for the people on the counterculture side, there's a lot of patience that needs to go into it, and just a lot of, you know, understanding, I guess, instead of just like being angry and aggressive, and then you're just going to butt heads and nothing's going to.
Yeah, I mean, the anger part of it is huge for me. So I'm working, my sort of like corner of the internet that I run in is Star Wars Twitter. And that's my ecosystem, where I think you've probably got a very different ecosystem on YouTube. And it is all out culture war between sort of really angry, apolitical Star Wars fans who are actually sort of conservative in their politics, or at least in their attitudes about life. And then there's sort of the progressive wing. And it's just all anger. And whenever something like woke happens at Disney, or you know, some sort of Star Wars creator mouths off about Trump voters, there is a reaction, and then there's an entire ecosystem for those right or apolitical fans to vent about it and be angry. And the incentive is to participate in all of it rather than stand up and say, hello, everybody, you are responsible for your own feelings, and you don't have to be angry. You could just let this thing go right over you and not feel anything about it at all. You know, it's like when people, and it's particularly again in Star Wars, they'll be like, you know, they've destroyed my childhood with this new woke character. No one can steal your childhood.
Right.
That's like an abdication of responsibility for you being able to protect the things that are sacred to you. I think that that is really important. There is a personal responsibility aspect of fighting against this culture, because the culture is all about feeling and engaging and just letting your emotions fly at all times. The best way to resist it is to take a deep breath and say, you know what? Actually, I'm going to think about what you said and not react.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, you mentioned like media in particular is just getting saturated with wokeness. My boyfriend is a big comic book fan, and comic books are just getting destroyed right now. And after a while, it just keeps happening. It's like, okay, we're not going to get upset about this. Let's brainstorm. What can we do? Can we start our own comic? Can we do our own channel? Like, what can we do to fight this?
I keep going. I always am laughing about one of the more recent versions of Captain America. I don't know if this is the time that you see Coates one for sure, but I looked at the panels. And so this was Captain America was like fighting some sort of like big shirtless white guy or whatever in the new editions of the comics. And he had his boot on Captain America's chest, and he was raging at Captain America and pointing a gun at him for sort of like participating in this globalist cabal that's allowed immigrants to run roughshod over the country and destroy his culture. And Captain America is like, but I too was a child of immigrants. Ooh. And it was just like this writing that it just sort of, you could imagine just sort of this liberal in Los Angeles just sitting back and writing a speech and then putting it into Captain America.
Yep.
Instead of like writing compelling dialogue that like gives you the same impression.
Yeah.
That is not a talking point that you just see thrown around on MSNBC every night. It just sounded shoehorned. And then the guy fighting Captain America has a tear trickle down his eye, and he just goes,
come on.
He just goes, what? You are a child of immigrants? I was wrong. I'm so sorry. And I think about it all the time as like the worst example of how comic book writing has just gotten to be platitudes.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's part of the problem. That's the frustration, and it's real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got nothing to say about that. It's terrible.
Well, so I just, to round out, I do want to ask, though, because I was, when you were talking about sort of standing up to these people, like, where does that come from for you? I mean, was this your parents? Did they raise you to be this way? Did you find this along in your own journey? Because it's a hard thing.
I found it. Like I said, I've been canceled multiple times, and each time it happened, I think I learned something new. And I think it was just the realization that not everything is how it seems. I've been canceled a lot by people that I thought were my friends, people that I went on vacation with, went out to dinner, you know, and it really hurt me, but
friends?
Yeah, friends. But it taught me, something about that. So I think that it was just that kind of conditioning, and it kept happening. And I said, okay, well, if this is happening to me, it's happening to a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. And if we all just keep bowing down to the mob, nothing's ever going to change. So I would love to see a new push back against cancel culture. And I think it's going to take some people to just say, I'm ready, whatever. Because at the end of the day, if you get hit by the mob, like with me, I know nothing can happen to me. You know, I'm in control of my finances. I don't pay any mind to what these people say to me online, and I just keep going. And I think, like you said earlier, their obsession helps me. So,
well, your audience loves you, and I think they look to you for strength. You know, I told you when you were on our show a couple of months ago about like the first time that I ever got like sort of the air of cancel culture sort of coming after me for like a mug that I created for my podcast that like angered a couple of people with really large audiences on Twitter. It was incredibly silly. Really stressed me out, like multiple days of just not being able to sleep. And I don't even know why. I don't even know why, but now I do. And it's from watching people like you step up to the plate on these people and not take it and have that attitude of not apologizing for something that you shouldn't be sorry for and being authentically yourself. People are drawn to that and they want to see people put their shoulders back, put their chin up, and say no. And that's what we're missing. And I just want to thank you for leading the way. And you're going to do that on this show. You're going to be contributing to the channel, the Cancel This video series. I'm excited for it. What are you going to do on the Cancel This series that kind of like stands apart from some of the stuff you've been doing recently? Is it going to be like covering cancel stories that happen on a week-to-week basis, or giving people the toolkit for survival, or both?
I'm going to do all of the above. Yeah. I want to tackle cancel culture from different angles because I think people only hear it from one perspective, which is, this is just accountability. And like, no, I want to hit this from every angle so I can get society to understand like this is a tool that we don't need. It creates more problems, and I'm going to show you that.
Yeah. Well, every week we do like to end on some good news. I think for me, like the good news is that you are joining this channel once a week to contribute the Cancel This video series. Really excited to have you be part of the family here right now. It's going to be fun. We're going to be building and growing a whole lot in the months to come. And you're just the start. And it's an exciting time. Anything else good going on in your world that you want to share?
Well, let's see. I have an opportunity to, I might be starting to go on, college campuses to speak to students. Yes. This is very different from what I'm used to, but, I guess my voice is needed on the campuses. So we'll see.
Do you have any details about that?
I don't really, not yet, because this is all happening so fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really excited to try. I've never done public speaking before, but I'm ready.
You know, let me know if I can help you. That's something that I do on the side as well, is help people get ready for stuff like that. So I look forward to seeing you out on the circuit. Vanessa Gothics, it's been nice having you on.
Thank you for having me.